Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Talk a little shop with one of the great minds of the game, part of the Yes Broadcast team, David Cone, and a terrific pitcher, big game pitcher. And he's got a new book out called Full Count. So Cody's with us here for two full segments, which is really sweet. All right, now, part of the book, if it's a book worth anything, you got to keep it real. And young David Cone liked to have fun. Much like if I was playing in that era, I would have probably been like David Cone.
No doubt.
You know, drinking and out late and the girls and whatever. I mean, do you forget about, I know athletes can't do it today because everybody's going to take a picture. Mm-hmm. But if there were no camera phones, how did you guys get up and play baseball? Like, you weren't going to get in trouble. Nobody was going to rat you out, so to speak.
Right.
But how the hell did you perform?
Sometimes we didn't.
Well, no, David Wells tells the story about his perfect game.
That's true. I mean, some did, some didn't. I mean,
said it was your fault, by the way.
But yeah, we pushed each other. And I talk about in the book, there's one chapter where David Wells and I, in 1998, we stayed away from the team hotel. We got a suite in a different hotel, and we got split up in the rotation. We both were starting pitchers, obviously, and we had some unbelievable parties. Yeah, it was musicians, actors. Matthew McConaughey shows up. Lars, the drummer for Metallica, shows up. Other musicians would show up, and we'd invite some of our teammates over to kind of get in the weeds a little bit.
Which teammates would come? Give me a couple names. Who would come? Who would you invite?
Well, Graham Lloyd was always there.
Graham Lloyd, big lefty. I love Graham. Okay, yes, Australia. He was ready to party.
Yes, and Chili Davis was part of that team. Chili was great. You know, several guys would show up here and there because they knew it was probably going to be a long night. So, we joke about it. Even, and that became apparent in this book with Jack Curry, is that when I covered my Mets days back in the 80s, that you were going to have to be real and honest and raw about some of the things and some of the mistakes we made. Some guys ended up at rehab, had addiction problems. I tell a story about hanging out with Strawberry when I was a rookie with the Mets, and we were downtown at a bar here in the city, and Straw was always a target. And some girl wanted to talk to Straw. There's always a girl involved, and some guy got mad. Next thing you know, it's like bad Leroy Brown. You know, Straw's on the ground, and I'm on the other side of the bar, and I came running. There was two guys on top of Straw. I came running from the other side of the bar and just jumped on these guys, just knocked them a little bit off to the side, and Straw got on his feet, and these two guys picked me up. I had a Coogly sweater from the 80s. This is 1980s. Okay. Those old wild Coogly sweaters. Guy picked me up by my Coogly sweater and threw me out on the curb. The bouncers got us out, and we're looking back in the bar, and Straw looks at me and says, "You're my guy. You took care of me." Just because I was willing to run and jump in, I tried to help him. Even though I'm a little guy, I would have got crushed, but luckily the bouncers jumped in. I mean, those are the kind of stories that we had with the Mets. It was a wild group of men. We used to hang out together after a game, on a day game on the road. There's 15 guys going out to dinner and then out to a bar afterwards, and we would take over the place, Tiki. It was our place.
See, we didn't have those luxuries. We were on curfews. I mean, it was
I wish I was on that team.
Yeah, seriously. The subtitle.
I would have jumped in the Strawberry fight. I would have tried to help him, too.
You stole your body into him.
That's right.
The subtitle of this is The Education of a Pitcher. What's your biggest lesson you learned? And what are you trying to tell people who read this book?
A couple. There's a cultural thread throughout the book that talks about some of the tough love of the old school ways of treating rookies. You really had to play that rookie role. You really got beat down. You got cut down a size, almost verbally abused at times by veterans.
That's true.
And that culture kind of has changed, and I think that's kind of for the better. It's to the point when I was a veteran and Derek Jeter was a rookie, we took a look at this kid and said, you know what, we need him. So let's try to help him. You know, we're not going to cut him.
He didn't get hazed.
Not at all. Not really. Wow. He didn't leave himself a target to be hazed either. I mean, certainly we checked him here and there, but he never made a mistake. You know, Derek was ready to go, and then we realized how important he was, and I could, there's a little bit of a culture change through there. And then also when I talk about some of the anxiety that I felt, nervousness, that you were perceived as really weak if you brought those up in the 80s or the late 70s. Like, you're not tough enough to play this game.
Even in the 90s, you were kind of perceived.
You can't even go in the
weak
trainer's room. Yeah. You know, they say LT used to go in for a couple of aspirin, and that was it.
Yeah,
that's the only time he's
hangover.
That's the only time he spent in the trainer's room. That was the old school mentality. And I think it's progress now. When you look at a guy like Zach Greinke, who's in Arizona, who's had some anxiety and depression issues, sought out help, got a little medication for it, and it really helped him, turned around his career. I think it's good to be open and have a support group and talk about these things if you've got issues off the field or or certainly through some of the addiction issues that some of the Mets players had. You know, I was right there. I saw it. I've seen the evolution of the game. And, you know, I think there's some real progress that's been made.
Kevin Love stepped out as well, and he put his name behind some of those issues. Speaking of the Mets, where did you stand? I read locally. I try to follow it as much as possible, but I didn't see anything coming from you. Where did you stand on the Dykstra-Ron Darling situation?
It's disappointing to me. Those are my teammates. Those are my brothers. You know, I hate to see them go at it like that. You know, Lenny obviously just raised all hell over it, being accused of being a racist or
can you blame him?
Whatever the story was.
That's the worst word to be called outside of a child.
Absolutely.
Right.
I wasn't on that 86 team. A lot of people think I was on the 86 Mets.
No, I know.
I kind of take credit for it now. People ask me, yeah, I was there, but I really wasn't. So I don't. I kind of get my senses. That Ronnie probably regrets the book at this point.
Mm. Okay, that's fair. David Cohn is with us here on Tiki and Tierney.
Let's go back to some modern or current baseball, I should say. How can Dallas Keuchel not be on a baseball team?
He's going
to be
on the Yankees, like I said, in
maybe,
a week.
Maybe he will. But
right
why,
after the draft.
But why is this going on the way that it's going on right now in baseball?
Well,
other guys as well. Yeah. Craig Kimball went through this.
There's some real issues with the collective bargaining agreement and the compensation system that really need to be addressed at this point. When you see guys like Vladimir Guerrero Jr., great young players that get artificially held down in order to manipulate their service time, that's an issue. We're not putting the best product on the field. And when you see free agents that have a draft pick compensation attached to their free agent signing that hurts their free agency, that's an issue that needs to be talked about. I think for players, it's about rights. It's about freedom. And for baseball players who have led the charge, their union, the Players Association, one of the most powerful in the history of in that genre,
true.
They need to get freer, more freedom sooner. They need to adjust the 6-year point when you're a free agent. Maybe needs to come down to 4 or 5 years. The arbitration probably needs to come down.
But you're seeing teams like go around that a little bit by signing these pre-arbitration deals. They've actually been
buying out the arbitration.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Buying up just a couple of record ones.
Yeah, Acuna just got paid.
Yep.
DeGrom got money. Even though DeGrom's older, he got paid.
Yeah, you're seeing that being a trend, and some people even think that's a little bit predatory because some of these kids that they're going after. Our targets, maybe kids that are from the Dominican that come from extreme poverty that may be more susceptible to an undervalued deal, so to speak. There's a recent story the other day where there's a number one pick, a kid that was an
Carter
eighth
Stewart.
Pick.
Yeah,
Carter Stewart that ended up signing in Japan, getting a $7 million deal.
Yep. Yeah,
that shows you how inequitable the early years are for a minor league player, the first years of a baseball player that you've you're almost 30, 31 years old before you get a chance to choose where you want to work and be a true free agent. That needs to happen sooner for these players.
And the problem is, too, now as you get older, I mean, we saw last year guys like Mike Moustakas basically having their own spring, 2 years ago, their own spring training.
And, only did a one-year deal.
Yeah, guys who are established pros. I mean, back in the day, you know, your prime usually was around maybe 28 to 32-ish, and, you know, it's been twisted a little bit to fit the team. So there's a lot of work to do with the game. Listen, we could keep you here all day, but unfortunately we can't. But the game's in a good place. It's fast. It's hitting, I feel, more and more demographics. I believe that baseball is incredibly healthy. There was a little low for a while. I was getting a little worried about my sport, about our sport. Looks like baseball's, aside from the monetary stuff with the contracts you hit, baseball's in a good place right now. It's moving forward very well.
Yeah, much better than it's given credit for. Yep. You know, the pace of play issues they talk about, the strikeouts, too many strikeouts, balls in play. Certainly, there are some subtle tweaks that can be had and can be done. But
would you get rid of the shift?
I would not ban the shift. You know, I think hitters should be able to hit around that shift and where to play defense. That should be left up to the defensive coaches. You know, maybe a pitch clock, and then maybe the strike zone. You know, I'm not automated. I've come full circle on this, and
ooh.
I think
automated.
I think that it's so unfair for home plate umpires because you have the box in front of the screen on television now, and you know. If the pitch is three inches outside and they call it a strike, they're so scrutinized now. It's almost unfair to them to where maybe not a full turnover to automated strike zone, but maybe some help here and there where you have an earpiece in and still keep the home plate umpire.
Yeah.
I think we're going in that direction.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's stoppable at this point.
I heard the story about Curt Schilling when they introduced that automated thing that corrected basically referees' mistakes. Curt Schilling used to get these strikes out of the zone. But as soon as the umpires knew that they were being judged on this,
yeah,
he stopped getting
Well,
it.
That happened to Tom Glavine as well.
Destroyed this machine because
wait, in the stadium, he actually physically destroyed it?
He took a bat to and destroyed it because he was a star. He used to get that call.
Yeah.
But as soon as there was a referee on the umpires, he didn't get the call anymore.
Wow. Well, he's a Hall of Famer, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely he is. You know, if you look at the history of the strike zone, in the 70s, it used to be like my iPhone 8 right here, more up and down. In the 90s, it went this way.
That's a good point.
More side to side. And they're gradually, with the new technology, getting it back to an up and down strike zone. And I applaud that. I didn't get the high strike called. These guys now can get the high strike called. What they found out is that leads to more swing and misses.
Yeah.
Guys throwing hard up in the zone.
Because of a little more of an uppercut, a little more of an
attention to launch angle to get the ball in the air to drive the baseball. And now the high strike zone coinciding with that is leading to more swings and misses, more pop-ups.
Now, you mean the armpit, like that high or a little bit below that?
I think more of the traditional strike zone, yes. More of the high strikes that are, you know, just below the letters or pitches that even at the belt I didn't get called in the 90s. Now, I got 6 inches off the plate.
Yeah.
In the 96 World Series, Tom Glavine and I pitched, and we both got 6 inches off the plate called strikes. But anything at the belt on the plate over the middle didn't get called strikes.
That series was unbelievable, man. When Jim Leyritz hit that three-run bomb over, why Wohlers, and I'm forever thankful that he did, why Wohlers sped up his bat with the slider when he couldn't hit his fastball is unforgivable.
It's true.
How do you do that?
I tell the Atlanta Braves Hall of Famers, Maddox, Glavine, and Smoltz, and I said, if you had Mariano Rivera at the end of your games, you would be the one with 4 or 5 rings. They got one.
That's true.
A lot of it because of what you're describing right there. They never had a closer that could lock it down at the end of the games for them.
All right, give me my baseball back, Coney. Let me see it, brother. No pressure. I don't want to drop it. David Cone, listen, big game guy, big game guts. The name of the book is Full Count. Just a real look through your baseball life, an honest, raw look, and good having you. And keep doing a great job with the Yankees. Obviously, you will. O'Neill and my buddy Michael Kay, you guys do a great job. It's fresh. And you and O'Neill you're kind of like the Mets, you know, Darling and Hernandez. I mean, that's basically what it sounds like.
Yeah, we have a lot of fun. Mix. When I work with Paul, it's a lot of fun. Same age, you know, hitter, pitcher. We have different perspectives, and it works well.
Coney, good seeing you, man.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. Thank God this guy calmed down a little bit. Nut job. David Cone.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.